welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden age. Mark Levinger, your host for an hour of true history. Later on, the story of Florence Nightingale on the Encore Theater. But first, the Cavalcade of America brings us a play called Abraham Lincoln in the War Years, starring the movie actor who was revered for his performance of Lincoln on the silver screen, Raymond Massey. The episode is called Abraham Lincoln and the War Years, from February 13, 1940, on the NBC Blue Network.
The Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont. Abraham Lincoln and the War Years, starring Raymond Massey. An original radio play by Robert E. Sherwood, written especially for tonight's Cavalcade of America. Based upon Carl Sandburg's Abraham Lincoln, the War Years.
No drama of Abraham Lincoln can have a finer introduction than the words written by Carl Sandburg in the preface to his timeless biography of the great emancipator. In the story of a great struggle, we meet gaps and discrepancies. Many men and women, now faded and gone, lived the drama before it could be written. They do and say what they did and said in life, as seen and known to the eyes and ears, the mind and spirit of themselves, or other men and women of their own time. Some of them spoke with action, some with words, some with both action and words. What they say by act or deed is often beyond fathoming, because it happened in a time of great stress. February 11th, 1861, 8 o'clock in the morning. A cold drizzle of rain is falling over the Great Western Railway Station in Springfield, Illinois. The prairie horizon is veiled in chilly gray mist. A short little locomotive with a flat-top smokestack stands puffing with a baggage car and special passenger car hitched on. Inside and around the brick station, 1,000 people have taken off their hats and are looking up at a tall, bearded man on the rear platform.
Friends, today I leave. I go to assume a task more difficult than that which devolved upon General Washington. Unless the great God who assisted him shall be with me and aid me, I must fail. Permit me to ask you that you will all invoke his wisdom and guidance for me. With these few words, I must leave you, for how long I know not. Friends, one and all, I must now bid you an affectionate farewell.
Goodbye, Abe.
Goodbye, Abe.
Decatur, they watched from saddle horses.
All over now. He'll split the Union worse than he ever did his Sangamon Law.
Prince of Rails, indeed.
Anybody with that abolition ape would make a better president. Isaiah Till should have been Judge Douglas.
At Indianapolis, they stood under darkening skies.
Mommy, I seen him.
Well,
there's not much to look at. Come on,
let's go
home. Take your
paw. Come on, Sonny. Well, Martha, it's the worst thing that ever could have happened. Big loon with flapping ears for a president. What's going to happen next?
At Buffalo, they watched, and some waited.
Get it going now with that saw, Jed. You just seen him on that train yourself.
Hurry up. Can't wait around all night for you to pay off that election bet. Next time, maybe you'll pick a winner.
All right. I'll pay my election bet. But you boys will see I'm right someday.
Yes,
the South will have something to say about Abe Lincoln being president. Wait and see. Just wait. There's going to be trouble. Plenty of trouble.
February 21st, 1861. Philadelphia, in a hotel parlor.
Well, here you are, Abe. I'm mighty glad to see you.
Thank you, Norman. If my journey keeps going on at the slow rate it has so far, it'll be Resurrection Day before I reach the cabin.
Well, anyway, in 10 days' time, you'll be president. Abe, the country wants to know how you're going to stop secession.
I can't answer him yet.
You've got to, Abe.
Now, listen. I want to tell you something. Once years ago, when I and other lorries were riding circuit, there was a heavy spell of rainfall, and all the streams were flooded, and we had great difficulty fording. We stopped at a little tavern. There we met a preacher who was accustomed to riding over that region in all sorts of weather. We gathered about him for advice as to how we could get over the Fox River. He told us he knew all about that. But he said, I have one fixed policy in regard to Fox River. I never cross it till I come to it.
Who's that?
A man's outside. Wants to see you, Mr. Judd, and the president.
All right, Abe?
Yeah, let him come.
Very well, boy.
This way, sir.
Gentlemen, my name is Alan Pinkerton. I am a detective in the employ of the Pennsylvania Railroad. I have come to tell you, Mr. Lincoln, that there's a serious plot to assassinate you when you arrive in Baltimore. The ringleader is a man named Fernandina.
Probably just another one of those fanatics.
But he has a strong group of followers. They're all armed. They're desperate. And, Mr. Lincoln, they're killers.
You are their enemy, Abe. You know that there are many who will do anything to prevent you from...
Be quiet, gentlemen.
I thought you were alone.
Good evening, Mrs. Lincoln.
It's just a little political discussion, Mary. That'll be all, gentlemen. I'll give your suggestions my most serious consideration.
Very good, sir. I'll see you later, Abe. Good day, Mrs. Lincoln.
Good day.
Good day, gentlemen.
Abe, what were they talking about?
Oh, they were just talking about political appointments. Come here, Mary. Come over to the window. Now then, Mary, look down there. That's Independence Hall where I'm speaking tomorrow.
I'm frightened. I'm frightened.
Frightened of what?
Of everything that may come to us. Civil war.
There's nothing to be scared of, Mary. We may have a pretty rough road ahead of us, but we'll pull through.
Everything's working as we planned, Mr. Lincoln.
Fine, Mr. Lincoln. Fine.
Taking this special train will get us to Baltimore long before you were scheduled to pass through. The town will be asleep. We'll be leaving any minute now.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Guess I'll get some sleep. Good night.
On the eve of his inauguration, Abraham Lincoln escaped assassination by secretly arriving in the national capital. They said it was degrading for a president to come like a thief in the night and make the American people the laughingstock of the entire world. But the incident was soon lost in a swirl of ominous events that engulfed the new family in the White House.
Abe, it's just as I keep telling you. You've got to take a stand.
What stand do you mean, Mary?
You must show the country you're determined to keep the states united. You'll have to do something about it. You'll have to, right away.
I know it, Mary. I know I will. But please don't let's talk about it now. Here come the children. Well, Willie... What do you and Tad think of your new home?
We were just telling Robert we've never seen such a big house. It's twice as big as Uncle Minion's in Springfield. Look, Willie, look at the paintings.
John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson and Zachary Taylor. And more. Look here.
Yes, I see it, Tad.
George Washington. That's the picture Dolly Madison ran off with so that the British wouldn't burn it. Hey, Pa.
Yes, Tad. What is it, son?
Do you suppose they'll ever hang a picture of you here?
Well, I tell you, son, after reading the papers lately, I doubt it.
Well, I don't believe them, Pa. Pa, now that you're president, can I have a pony?
Tell you what, Willie, we'll have to ask Congress about that.
Robert.
Yes, Ma?
Take the children out on the lawn. They can play there.
Very well, Ma. Come on, you two.
Will you ask Congress about the pony, Pa? Can we go down to Congress right now?
We'll see about it later. Willie.
Yes, Pa?
Don't play too hard now, so you'll be all tuckered out.
No, Pa.
Well, Mary, I... kind of think Willie's looking better at that. Maybe we should buy him that pony.
Abe, I tell you again, the situation is serious. What are you going to do about Fort Sumter?
I don't know, Mary. Hard to know what to do about it. I gotta try to figure it out. Gentlemen, I call this meeting of the cabinet to discuss the serious situation in Charleston. It is proposed that this government send relief to Fort Sumter. Do you think we should do it, Mr. Seward?
No, I do not. Such an action would provoke instant secession in the South and lead us directly into a civil war.
What about you, Mr. Chase?
I agree with Mr. Seward.
You, Mr. Cameron?
Let the people of South Carolina have Fort Sumter and let us have peace.
Mr. Blair, what is your opinion?
If we fail to come to the defense of Fort Sumter, we may as well shut up shop as a self-respecting government. We must send relief, even if it does mean war.
Mr. Wells?
I disagree heartily with Mr. Blair.
Mr. Smith?
I vote no on sending relief.
Mr. Bates?
My vote is the same. Evacuate Fort Sumter. If the South wants to secede and form a new nation, let them do it. There's room on this continent for as many nations as there are in Europe.
Our course is clear, Mr. President. The sentiment of this cabinet is 7-1 in favor of evacuation of Fort Sumter.
Thank you, General. Thank you for giving me the benefit of your opinion. But the final responsibility rests on me.
Yes, Mr. President. And your first duty is to preserve peace.
My first duty is to preserve this Union. And my policy must be governed by the dictates of my own conscience as to what is right. I shall give orders at once to the Army and Navy to send relief to Fort Sumter.
Mr. President, it won't be easy for you to justify this dangerous action to the Congress and the people.
I know that, Mr. Seward. I know it won't be easy. Fellow citizens of the Senate and House of Representatives, Fort Sumter has been attacked and bombarded and has fallen. This action has forced upon the country the distinct issue, immediate dissolution or blood. This issue embraces more than the fate of these United States. It presents to the whole family of man the question whether a constitutional republic or democracy, a government of the people by the same people, can or cannot maintain its territorial integrity against its own domestic foes. It forces us to ask, is there in all republics this inherent and fatal weakness? Must a government of necessity be too strong for the liberties of its own people or too weak to maintain its own existence? Gentlemen, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves. We shall nobly save or meanly lose the last best hope of earth.
We're coming, Abe.
We're with you, Abe.
Count on me, Abe.
We're with you, Abe.
We're coming, Abe.
We're with you, Abe. We're coming, Abe. We're coming, Abe.
Abraham Lincoln was confronted with a divided nation rent asunder in tragic civil war. And as the months of fear and anxiety passed, many mistrusted Abraham Lincoln, scorned him, hated him, refused to fight under his leadership. And as the clouds of war darkened a nation, a personal sorrow was deepening in the heart of the gaunt figure in the White House.
Pa.
Yes, Willie.
I want to see my pony. When can I see him, Pa?
You'll see him soon, Willie.
Soon, Pa?
Yes, son. But first, you got to get well. That's the main thing. Just rest quietly, son. Yes, I will. Close your eyes now and go to sleep. How is he, Doctor? I want the truth. How is he?
Come over here, Mr. President. We're doing all we can.
You've got to save his life. Doctor, you've got to.
We're trying. That's all we can do now. Try, Mr. President.
I understand. Thank you, Doctor. Mustn't give way, Mary. I know how hard it is. Sometimes I feel I can never be glad again. But we've got to keep our sorrow to ourselves. There are many thousands of mothers and fathers, north and south, who have seen their own sons die on the field of battle. It's up to us to set them an example in courage.
It's one thing to be thankful for. At least our little boy died an innocent child.
Mary.
I'd rather have him go that way. Have him killed in this horrible war. So cruel. So senseless. Brother fighting against brother. My own brothers are fighting on the southern side against us.
Mary, I wish you would not speak of that.
Why not, Abe? My brothers are fighting for the South because that's the cause they believe in. Why shouldn't I speak of it? I'm proud of him. Do you believe what the gossips are saying? I'm a traitor because my family came from Kentucky. But I'm really against you and the Northern cause.
Mary, you don't have to ask me that.
Gentlemen, this committee of the Senate has been assembled in strictest secrecy to investigate a certain very grave matter. The belief is spreading throughout the country that all our misfortunes can be traced to one person, a spy in the White House. That person is Mrs. Lincoln.
Gentlemen, I beg you not to be too hasty. This matter is of the gravest importance to the nation.
It certainly is. With what we all know, I'm in favor of exposing the whole presidential scandal. And I'd go as far as impeachment.
Well, now, wait a minute. We can't have a public scandal. Not at this time, anyway.
Well, attention, gentlemen.
What is it?
The president.
The president? What? How did he know we were meeting?
He's not. Will you go in, Mr. President?
Thank you.
I wish to make a statement to you, gentlemen. It is as follows. I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, appear of my own volition before this committee of the Senate to say that I, of my own knowledge, know that it is untrue that any of my family hold treasonable communication with the enemy.
The committee was deeply moved and the investigation was dropped. But Lincoln's sadness was not relieved. On a chill gray November day in 1863, the president was sitting on a platform on Cemetery Hill in Gettysburg, listening to an oration by Edward Everett. It was an oration. It lasted 2 hours, but the crowd there loved it.
Wonderful speech, wasn't it?
That's the kind of speech I like. Big words, and old Everett sure knows how to say them.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new name. Conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Like to eat an apple?
Now we are engaged in a great civil war. Testing whether that...
Crop this year ain't so good.
We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate...
Hey, old Abe's talking now.
Can't hear him, can you?
Well, don't make much difference if we do. Abe can't hold a candle to Edward Everett as an orator. But come on, let's try to get closer.
Well, I'll tell you, old Abe ain't so bad, you know, but he certainly picked the wrong time to be president.
We cannot dedicate. We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Say, did you hear what he said just then?
No, it wasn't.
Rather to be, he said, nobody'd remember what he's saying here.
Well, he hit the nail on the head that time.
It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Well, guess he's finished.
Yeah, he's finished. Come on, let's go home.
There were many who did not understand and appreciate the meaning of Lincoln's words at Gettysburg that day, But their portent and message has outlived the tragedy and chaos of those four sorrowful years. At last, the superior strength and wealth of the northern states asserted themselves, and the tragic war came to an end. And on March 4th, 1865, Abraham Lincoln was inaugurated for the second time.
With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations.
April 14, 1865 was Good Friday. It was a lovely spring day in Washington, and the President and Mrs. Lincoln went for a stroll.
Good day, Mr. Lincoln.
Good day, sir.
Good day.
Good day there, boys. What's your regiment, son?
157th New York Volunteers, Mr. President.
Oh, yes, Colonel Brown's regiment. And you, Sonny, what's yours?
The 5th Michigan Cavalry, Mr. President.
That's fine. Well, it's all over now, boys. You'll be going home soon, and there'll be a heap of work for all of us to do.
Yes, sir. That's right.
Goodbye, boys. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Good day, sir. You know, Mary, it's been a hard time for the people.
It's been a hard time for us.
And I tell you, when my term of office is over, we'll go back to Illinois and pass the rest of our lives in quiet. I'll take up law practice again, just as if nothing had happened. It'll be good to be among our own neighbors again.
Oh, Abe. Do you think people will ever feel really happy again?
Yes, Mary. People get over these things if they try, even when they haven't much heart for it.
Well, you can try. But I don't really feel like going to the theater tonight.
We mustn't feel like that, Mary. It'll do us good. It's been a long time since we've been able to sit back and enjoy a real good laugh.
Washington.
Mr. Trencher, you will please recollect to our gutty my dog and in my presence. Augusta, dear. Who's your dog?
Yes, Mom.
And that would be gracious, Abe. What's everybody going to think my hanging on to you so?
They won't think anything about it. Now listen, Mary.
And that alone will excuse the impertinence of which you have been guilty. You know the man is a good society, huh? Well, I guess enough to know if you turn you inside out, old gal. You stop dialogizing old man.
Stop telling it!
Funeral. It took long to pass many given points. Many millions of people saw it. The line of march ran 1,700 miles. Yes, there was a funeral from the White House in Washington where it began. They carried his coffin and followed it nights and days for 12 days. Bells tolling. Bells sobbing the requiem. The salute gun. Cannon rumbling their inarticulate thunder. To Springfield, Illinois, the old hometown, the Sangamon nearby, the New Salem hilltop nearby, for the final rest of the cherished dust. And the night came with great quiet, and there was rest. The prairie years, the war years, were over.
Thus, in the closing words of Carl Sandburg's immortal testament to the great emancipator, the Cavalcade of America's dramatization of Abraham Lincoln comes to a close.
The Cavalcade of America, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC Blue Network broadcast from February 13, 1940. the same year that star Raymond Massey appeared as Abe Lincoln in the motion picture Abe Lincoln in Illinois, for which he received an Oscar nomination for that role. In 1962, he would play Lincoln in the movies again in an appearance in How the West Was Won. You are listening to An Hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now the story of nurse and a pioneer of nurses, Florence Nightingale, featured on the Encore Theater. The play called White Angel, from July 9, 1946, on CBS.
Shenley Laboratories, producer of penicillin Shenley and Shenley Pharmaceuticals, presents the Encore Theater. The Encore Theater play tonight, White Angel.
In here in the library, Mother.
Florence, you aren't dressed.
Did you forget about the lamb's dinner?
Father, how can you go to dinner parties with all these terrible problems in the hospitals?
Florence, you haven't been reading those reports I brought home.
Yes, I have. Father, what's the cause of these appalling conditions?
Well, for one thing, it seems to be impossible to get enough nurses.
Now, Florence, we all know that there are aspects of life that we must all regret. Fortunately, we don't have to encounter them. Now, run up and change your dress, dear. We're going to be terribly late.
Mother, there's a tragedy on every one of those pages. People are dying for lack of care. Haven't you any imagination? Doesn't it call on you for service and help?
I'm only thankful, Florence, that I lead a well-ordered life in pleasant places and with beautiful associations.
But, Mother...
Florence, dear, I can't see why you should let yourself become upset. I'm sure that your father will do everything in his power to improve matters. You'll forget all about this as soon as you're married to Charles.
But I'm not going to marry Charles. It's out of the question.
Now, my dear, you're just a little upset tonight. Things will look differently in the morning.
I'm never going to marry anyone.
Now, Charles is a very desirable husband. He's handsome, well-educated, good family.
Charles is much more than that, Mother. Charles is all the things I used to dream about when I was a little girl. All the things any woman would want a man to be. And if I could limit my life to the confines of one small world, I would marry Charles, and I'm sure I'd be very happy, but I can't.
Why not, Florence?
Because I want to do something bigger, something really worthwhile. I want to feel when I'm ready to die that I've contributed something to the world.
You could be a wife and a mother. What more could any woman be?
I'm going to be a nurse. I'm going to Sweden next week to train.
How do you like scrubbing floors?
I've done things I like better.
I can't make you out coming all the way to Stockholm to do this. Aren't there any training schools for nurses in England?
No, Minna. In England, they don't teach girls to do anything.
Oh, what a wonderful country to live in.
Ladies, you're forgetting the rules of the institution. Work must be done silently. Come, my probationers. I'm wanted by my patient in room 20. I want you to come along.
Come on, Minna.
We just sat down to eat.
You can't eat if your patients need you.
Come, girls. This is no time for dawdling.
Let me make the bed for you, Mrs. Arnold.
Certainly not. All you've got to do is look on and learn all you can. You're not ready yet for practical work.
All we're ready for is chambermaid work, scrubbing and cleaning and everything else that's disagreeable.
A very important rule in nursing is not to chatter. I'll carry these sheets downstairs.
When may we take charge of patients?
After you've learned your ABCs. A course of dirty work makes the best nurses.
Some more crumpets, Lady Anne?
No, thank you, Mr. Herbert. As I was saying, I deplore all this revolutionary spirit on the continent. I do hope that Florence will get home safely from Stockholm.
Mrs. Nightingale tells me that she's expected back tomorrow.
How her mother must be looking forward to her settling down.
Settling down? Hadn't you heard? Florence is determined to become a hospital nurse.
A hospital nurse? Oh, you're not serious.
I certainly am, and so is Florence. If she were my daughter, I'd give her a good whipping.
Well, Annette! kitchen, mixing with women of the lowest order. So far as I'm concerned, I shall cease to know Miss Nightingale from this moment onwards.
I'm sorry to hear you say that, my dear, because I shall admire her more than ever. She sets us all an example by her courage and independence. Any intelligent doctor will go out of his way to get hold of her, particularly with war brewing on the continent. We need nurses more than ever. Florence, my dear, what are you doing here in the War Office? Not thinking of joining the Army, are you?
Hello, Mr. Herbert. Yes, I am, if they'll have me. Father is in with the Army Board now. He took my application and...
Don't be too disappointed if they turn you down.
Why should they turn me down when they need me?
Sometimes it's a little hard to get men to admit that they need women.
Well, Father?
I'm sorry, Florence.
What did they say?
They said that the medical staff at Scutari was quite satisfied with the male nurses that they had. They said that female nurses might appeal to the Frenchmen, but not to Englishmen. They wouldn't even consider the idea of sending you to Scutari, Florence.
They're just being obstinate and out of date.
Perhaps it's just as well, Florence. Think of the hardships you'd have to go through to get to the Crimea. It's a long way from London.
They don't need you, Florence, but they thank you for your generous offer.
Don't need me, Father. Look at this article in the Times. Fuller says, the sufferings of the sick and wounded are indescribable. There are no dressers and nurses. There are not sufficient surgeons. There's not even linen to make bandages for the wounded. The wounded were led to believe that everything was ready which could ease their pain. But it was found that the commonest appliances of a workhouse sick ward were lacking. How dare they say they don't need me when they need everything and everyone that can help?
I don't know how much weight I can swing with the board, but I'll be glad to talk to them for you, if you like, Florence.
Oh, would you do that?
If they will send you, it'll mean reorganizing the entire Army medical system. You would be under the Minister of State and also under Lord Raglan, who's Commander-in-Chief. You'd have to work in cooperation with his medical officers. Are you sure you'd be willing to do that?
I'm willing to do anything to help.
Very well. I'll see what I can do.
Have you done any nursing?
All women ready to be interviewed by Miss Nightingale. Line up over here, please.
Have you done any nursing?
Well, I should think I have. I've nursed three husbands on their deathbeds, and I've worked at St. Thomas's Hospital, and the Middlesex Hospital, and Charing Cross Hospital.
Sorry, you've been in too many places for me. Next?
Yes, Miss Nightingale.
What nursing have you done?
None, but I've worked hard all my life. I've looked after a husband and several children. Oh, I know I'm not really experienced, but I can soon learn. I'm willing to do anything.
You're willing to go to Scutari?
Yes, Miss Nightingale.
All right, report to the woman at the next desk. She will give you the necessary forms. Next? Oh, you're Sister Columba from the Order of St. Vincent, aren't you?
Yes, I've been in charge of the infirmary at the convent, and I'm willing to do anything that's needed.
Thank you, Sister. We shall have plenty for you to do. Will you go over to Mrs. Herbert's table? She's enrolling the nurses.
Miss Nightingale.
Well, I'm sorry, we're only interviewing women nurses.
I'm not a nurse, I'm a cook. I'm a chef of the Reform Club. My name is Alexis Soyer, and I would like to join your expedition. I know that for me also there's work at Scutari.
Monsieur Soyer, I accept your offer most thankfully. You shall be in charge of the hospital kitchen.
May I speak to you for a moment, Florence?
Of course, Mr. Herbert.
Come in, please. Florence, here is your letter of introduction to Colonel Hunt. He's the commanding officer at Scutari. You're under military discipline now, Florence.
I understand.
Colonel Hunt has been advised already that you're coming. I can't tell you whether he's pleased or not.
I'm sure he isn't.
Read that communique, Dr. Scott. Did you ever hear of such impertinence? What the War Office is thinking of? Sending a woman here to Scutari.
Who is this Miss Nightingale, Colonel Hunt?
Who knows? Some female busybody.
Oh, I imagine she's here mainly in an advisory position.
What she can advise me about, I can't imagine. Well, I'm not going to worry about her. There's always hope while there's the English Channel. She probably won't get further than Boulogne.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, Colonel, but her boat is due in this morning.
What?
What hospital are you assigning Miss Nightingale to?
This one.
But we have typhoid cases here.
She wants to be a nurse. Here's our chance to prove it.
Why don't you assign her to my hospital until this typhoid epidemic is over? One can never tell with this kind of infection.
You'd better tell that to Miss Nightingale so she'll go home and stay home.
Oh, I think you're treating her outrageously.
You're forgetting yourself, Dr. Scott.
I think not, sir.
You leave for the front. Immediately.
Yes, sir.
Orderly, please open those windows. We need some air in here.
Don't do that, miss. The smell's so awful and the rats come in.
When we've cleaned up everywhere, there will be no more smells or vermin. Are you the storekeeper?
Yes. What can I do for you, miss?
To begin with, I want a dozen mops, a dozen buckets, and all the soap, sponges, and floor cloths you've got. I want 500 nightshirts, and I'll send some nurses over for them in 5 minutes.
Give me your requisition, and I'll see that in due course it reaches the board of directors.
A board of directors for a hospital store? Can't you give me these things yourself? The men are in such hideous discomfort, they can't wait another minute.
I'm not allowed to issue anything till it's been passed by the board. I can't go beyond my regulations.
I command you to give them to me.
I've got my orders, and I'm going to obey them.
I've got my orders, too. And when my nurses arrive here, you'd better give them their supplies.
I've come to make a complaint against Miss Nightingale, sir.
What's she done?
She's stolen 500 shirts and a good many other things, sir. She broke in with a bunch of nurses and took them.
And you let her?
I can't fight women, sir.
Well, I can. I'm glad you came in, Miss Nightingale. I wanted to talk to you.
I wanted to talk to you. You've avoided me since the moment of my arrival. I hope what I am going to say may be for the good of the common cause we both serve.
You don't understand. I'm an army officer.
I know, and I'm a nurse. But I think it would be for the benefit of the sick and wounded if we could talk openly to one another.
What is it you want to say?
Colonel Hunt, what makes you show this animosity towards me?
Miss Nightingale, I appreciate the frankness of your question. I'm not opposed to you as a person, but I object to the idea of women nurses for the army.
And why do you object?
You make the men soft. Soldiers don't need to be coddled by a lot of women.
We don't coddle the soldiers. We try to make their pitiful state easier to bear.
There's nothing to pity. It's part of a soldier's life.
Colonel Hunt, have you ever been sick or wounded?
Yes, and I know what a man can stand.
Is there no possibility of an understanding between us?
None whatever. I warn you that if you show any further insubordination, I shall have you court-martialed.
Colonel Hunt, I'm here to work simply and solely for the benefit of the soldiers. I shall continue to do so in any way that it is necessary.
During the weeks that followed, she became a legend. The soldiers that she nursed idolized her, and so did people all over the world who read and heard of her work. In America, a man named Longfellow wrote a poem, and in the writing, gave her a title that would live forever, The Lady with the Lamp. She became a goddess of life and healing to officer, infantryman, drummer boy.
Miss Nightingale?
Here I am, Tommy. I'll sit by your bed a moment, shall I?
Hold my hand.
What's the matter, Tommy? You're usually in much better spirits.
The doctor told him that he won't live until tomorrow, miss.
I shan't mind dying if you're with me.
Tommy, have you got a mother and a father?
Sure I have.
Well, then you think about them and how much they'll all want to see you again. I'll tell you what we'll do. Tomorrow, you and I will write them a letter.
Tomorrow? Tomorrow.
Nightingale?
He's still sleeping.
You've been here all night?
Yes. And look, his fever's gone down. He's much better.
I don't understand. They didn't think he could live until morning.
He's going to live. He's going to be all right.
A little care goes a long way.
Yes, and a little love goes a long way further. I'm glad he's better. I wouldn't like to leave for the Crimea as long as anyone still needed me here.
Well, Miss Nightingale, welcome to the Crimea.
Oh, Dr. Scott, I'm so glad to see you. I need your help. The officials here won't supply my staff with any food. Who gave them such an idiotic order?
I did.
You who?
Those were Colonel Hunt's instructions. I had no choice but to obey them.
Colonel Hunt is going out of his way to be vindictive. You can't be expected to obey him.
Oh, I don't dare fall foul of him again. I was sent here because I told him what I thought of him for putting you in the typhoid ward. If I disobeyed him now, it would mean a court-martial. I can't risk that.
Well, I should think not, indeed. It doesn't matter about me. I can always get along with a cup of tea, but I must do something about my nurses. They're famished.
Miss Nightingale?
Yes, what is it?
We've been refused admittance to the hospital.
What?
We are certainly not warded here.
Did you give that order too, Dr. Scott?
You don't understand. I'm part of this miserable system.
Your system may starve me, but it will never succeed in keeping me from my sick. I shall go to the hospital at once and demand admittance. Florence Nightingale.
I'm sorry, miss. I can't pass you into the hospital.
Why not?
Orders. I hope you'll go quietly back, miss. If you try to come in here, I shall be obliged to restrain you. Orders are orders.
Then I shall wait out here till they're canceled.
In the snow, miss?
In the snow.
Dr. Scott?
Lord Raglan.
I've been informed that Miss Nightingale has been refused admission to the hospital. Was this done by an official order?
Yes, sir.
Where is that order, Dr. Scott?
Here, sir.
Pick it up.
Yes, sir.
Now tear it up.
But, sir...
I am Commander-in-Chief of the British Army. I said to tear it up.
Yes, sir.
Miss Nightingale?
Yes, sir.
I am Lord Raglan, Commander-in-Chief of the British Armies. My arm, madam. I will escort you personally into our hospital. Gentlemen of the medical staff, I am deeply ashamed that such a thing could have happened in the Army to a lady of our country. Colonel Hunt is to be relieved of his post at Scutari, and I want the entire army to know that I have said most emphatically that there must be no more of these petty jealousies. Thank you, gentlemen. That will be all.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Yes, Dr. Scott, what is it?
It's Miss Nightingale, sir. She's ill. She has the cholera.
How do you feel today, Miss Nightingale?
Better, Lord Raglan. I'll be up and about soon.
Not too soon. I wanted you to know that letters have been pouring in from all parts of the world, concerned for your well-being. And this morning we had a letter from Her Majesty the Queen, sending her good wishes for your recovery.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're going home for a visit as soon as you're well enough. Her Majesty wishes to meet you. In her own words, she wishes to have the honor of meeting you. Crying, Miss Nightingale? That's not very soldierly of you.
I know.
Oh, but how very lovely it is to see that someone so much a soldier can also be so much a woman.
Name, please.
Miss Smith.
Anything to declare?
No. Shall I open my suitcase?
That's all right, miss. Go ahead.
see what it says here in the Times, Walter? Yesterday, Miss Nightingale returned as Miss Smith to her home at Embley without anyone being aware that she'd even landed in England.
Just like her, isn't it?
Miss Nightingale wishes it to be known that she desires no reception celebrations in her honor. She would prefer that the money for such a purpose should be the nucleus of a fund for building training schools for nurses in England.
She's a fine woman. God bless her.
Oh, Florence, I could just cry. I spent weeks planning a gown for you to wear to see the Queen.
I'm sorry, Mother. It isn't that I don't appreciate it, but I'm going as I am.
In that old uniform.
I'm going to meet her as a nurse, wearing the uniform that symbolizes my work. It's my work and its future that matters.
Now, I'm sure the Queen won't want to hear your views on nursing. She'll like you to be pleasant. One or two anecdotes about the war, perhaps, but no opinions.
Sir Herbert is waiting for you in the carriage, Florence.
I'm coming, Father.
Florence, at least do one thing for me. Please let the Queen speak first.
This is Her Majesty's audience chamber in here, Florence. I'll take you in and then I'll wait for you downstairs.
I think I'm a little scared.
You don't need to be. I think you'll find that you and the Queen see eye to eye about a good many things. Miss Nightingale, I presume?
Yes.
Hello, Mr. Bullock. Florence, may I present Mr. Bullock, the permanent undersecretary to the War Office?
Indeed. Well, this is an unexpected pleasure, Mr. Bullock. It is always interesting to meet an adversary. You are one of the men who has been fighting me for 2 years, aren't you?
I'm afraid you're mistaken on only one point. I'm still fighting you.
Why?
Because you are a dangerously progressive woman.
Then, Mr. Bullock, you are not fighting me, but the ideals for which I stand.
Ideals which will inevitably undermine the system I represent, if they are ever allowed openly to be put into practice.
What do you feel?
We cannot afford experiments.
And we cannot afford to wait.
Whether you wait or not will depend largely upon the decisions of Her Majesty the Queen. It seems only fair to tell you that I have already spoken to her regarding the War Office's attitude in this matter.
I'm sorry to hear that, Bullock. It seems to me that it would be only common courtesy to allow Miss Nightingale to see her first.
Miss Nightingale has chosen to enter a man's world. She need not, therefore, expect any quarter because she's a woman.
I don't expect any quarter, nor shall I give any. I have been fighting a long time now, Mr. Bullock, and I know how to fight.
There's no doubt about that. Well, Miss Nightingale, it's been most interesting to meet you and to have this opportunity of talking with you. Good day.
Good day.
It's almost time for your appointment. I'll leave you here in Her Majesty's audience chamber. She'll be in a moment.
That's a fine portrait of her. I think I'll practice my speech. I won't get stage fright in front of a portrait.
You go right ahead, Flo. I'll wait for you downstairs. Good luck.
Thank you. Your Majesty, I expect that Colonel Hunt has told you about the defects in my work at Scutari. No one knows them better than I. But the difficulties that my loyal nurses had to face were at times almost insurmountable. Whatever else I may have done during the war, I have shown beyond doubt that nursing is woman's highest vocation. It is for the future of nursing that I am pleading. All over the civilized world, the development of every branch of science is being furthered, except the science of nursing. Nothing is being done for that. To be unprepared when the hour strikes is a crime. To be ready is the secret of life. I want to establish training schools for nurses, for the great army of women that is coming out of the future, ready and willing to take my vow. I solemnly pledge myself before God to pass my life in purity and to practice my profession faithfully. I will abstain from whatever is deleterious and mischievous and will not take or knowingly administer any harmful drug. I will do all in my power to elevate the standard of my profession and will hold in confidence all personal matters committed to my keeping and all family affairs coming to my knowledge in the practice of my profession. With loyalty will I endeavor to aid the physician in his work and devote myself to the welfare of those committed to my care.
Oh, Miss Nightingale,
Oh, Your Majesty, I'm so sorry. I didn't hear you come in.
I'm glad you didn't. It was a fine speech. And I want you to know that not only do I appreciate the fine work you've done, but I shall do everything in my power to see that it continues.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
Miss Nightingale, it is with great pleasure that I present to you this brooch, the form and emblem of which commemorate your great and blessed work, St. George's Cross. And underneath are these words, "Blessed are the merciful." May I pin it on your uniform?
Your Majesty.
England is most proud of you, Miss Nightingale.
White Angel was produced and directed by Bill Lawrence and was presented through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, who this year is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Sound Pictures. It was a Gene Holloway adaptation. This is Frank Graham speaking for Shenley Laboratories, producer of Penicillin Shenley.
The Encore Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, from July 9, 1946 on CBS. Although Florence Nightingale passed away before radio's golden age in August of 1910, her voice was recorded and saved for posterity by the Mutual Network in a program called Spin Back the Years. And that closes this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.